are listening to The Empowered Caregiver with Kristen Voss and Liza Hellenbrand. Tonight, it is just Kristen. Liza is on a well-deserved vacation, and I'm really excited for her. She's not had a full week vacation in a very long time. We have a great show planned for today. I can't wait to get started with our guests. We're going to be joined by Lynn Abati-Johnson, a business consultant and global community builder in the digital marketing space, who wrote the book Out of Love about the caregiving experience she had with her mother and her amazing journey of working while being a caregiver. Then we'll be speaking with Angela Howard, the founder and CEO of Call for Culture, an organization that is hacking the intersection of business impact and employee interest. These are such great words, but I can't get them all out. Let's try that again. They are an organization that is hacking the intersection of business impact and employee interest to sustainably transform workplace cultures. These two leaders have some interesting perspectives to share to get us all thinking outside of the box, especially in terms of what work is, how to be employed as a family caregiver, and how to get a better sense of what we need as caregivers and individuals. So let's get started. Welcome, Lynn. You have recently published Out of Love, A Daughter's Journey with Her Mom to the End. Can you tell us what inspired you to write this book and what you hope readers take away from it?
For having me. I really appreciate being here with you. I wrote the book because it had to be written. It had to be shared. I realized through my transformational journey through caregiving for my mom and the grief process that not many conversations have been happening around things that are uncomfortable, maybe stigmatized. And when my mom was first diagnosed in 2011, I thought it was a death sentence for me as well. And I just couldn't imagine being on the planet without my mom. And what I learned, fortunately, we had about 6 years, a little over 6 years with her on that, what I call the cancer roller coaster. And so I really gained some tools over those years to not only sustain myself in my own leadership journey emotionally and spiritually and at a soul level, but also practical tools and logistics that I now offer to other family caregivers to help through their journeys of the everyday, in and out, always different scenarios that happen when someone, a loved one especially, is going through some kind of a health journey. It could be anything.
Sure. And isn't that true, that it is just a whole roller coaster of different experiences and different feelings? And so what do you hope readers take away from reading that, though?
That everything's going to be okay. My main message for other family caregivers is that you're going to be okay. You're not alone. And that these days, unlike the years that I was going through it, there is so much more support. There are so many more resources. And I know for sure that you're going to be okay, dear fellow caregivers. So,
well, thank you. As a family caregiver, I love hearing that, because both Lynn and Angela have had an inside picture to the frazzled life of Kristen, the working empowered caregiver. As I'm trying to sit down in front of our radio show tonight and managing a lot of different fires. So I think that's great. I'm going to lean into that tonight, that I am going to be okay, because you two have already been incredibly gracious as guests, knowing that I'm coming here at the last second. And so it's just, it's a great community and a great message. Well, it's a great message to give a great community, right? To help us feel like we aren't alone and that we can do this.
Yes. And I'm here because I'm with you. And that's what I always say. I'm with you. And even though our circumstances are completely unique, we still have a common thread that weaves together that tapestry that we all live in our daily lives. And what you're doing with the Empowered Caregiver Network at the community is really phenomenal. So I want to be part of more of these kinds of conversations in everyday life. I want it to be mainstream.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you, Lynn. I'm curious, at what time in your journey did you identify as the family caregiver? And at that time of being a caregiver, did you do any research on what that meant for you? Because it sounds like you said there's so many more. Well, how long ago was it when you, so mom passed, you had mom with a cancer diagnosis for 6 years. What year did she pass?
2017. In fact, it was May 1st, 2017.
Oh, it's coming up.
Diagnosed in 2011, early 2011, and I had no idea, Kristen, what a caregiver even was. I didn't even know that was a term,
right?
First of all, and no one in our family had ever had any kind of serious diagnosis, even though my mom carried the BRCA2 gene. So interestingly, and if you've ever looked at epigenetics, there's a whole interesting science there. But neither one of my grandparents ever manifested what the gene that they were carrying. One of them was carrying it, and neither one of them ever had cancer. And so my mom was the first that I knew about that was a close relative. And so I did not understand the meaning of the term caregiver. I didn't know there was such a thing as family caregiver. In fact, I just recently learned about respite caregiving. Like, I felt like we were completely on our own, deer in the headlights, hanging by a thread at every moment, and trying to figure it all out and sort through this maze of information all at once. So all of a sudden we had to learn about what cancer even is. And then we had to learn about what cancer likes and what it doesn't like, and what to eat, what to drink, you know, all this, like supplements, and how the East and Western health approaches complement each other or are contraindicated. I never knew the meaning of the word contraindicated in terms of medications and supplements. And so what ended up happening was that we created systems and structures around my mom's care. And it was really interesting because I always say we almost turned my mom's diagnosis into a business because we were all entrepreneurs. And so
as professionals, you were all entrepreneurs.
Yes. Yeah. My mom was like the original marketer in our family that before that was even a term. And she was an entrepreneur. And I was raised in a family business, working from the age of 9, facing customers. And so all we knew to do was to build some structure and some systems around her diagnosis. And so that's why in the book and on my website, I provide free PDFs of, you know, checklists and tracking charts and all of those practical logistical things that I knew we would either forget about or we wouldn't even know about in our journey of care for her.
And I wish I had found you a lot sooner too, right? And all the resources, because I know that many of our listeners, but I might not have shared with both of our guests here what our story is. Liza and I are both parents of adult children, young adult children with autism, and then an intellectual disability compounding with that. And then my daughter has epilepsy. So similar to you, nobody in our family had epilepsy. So all of a sudden I was a teacher, not just a teacher, but a teacher, right? And I was proud of that, but I became, like you said, a business executive that had to manage all these different systems, a nurse, a doctor, a researcher, and it can be overwhelming. And having those tools, I mean, that's wonderful. So let's give a quick shout out to your website so that people can get to those specific things. I'll let you do it.
It's LynnAbatejohnsonBook.com.
Let's spell that.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and spell it.
LYNN. A, B as in boy, A-T-E, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, B-O-O-K.com. Okay. And then you'll see at the top, there's a tab for resources, and then you can just go in and get the, you know, you just put in your email address and.
Right. Exactly. That's perfect.
Nothing to buy.
Right. And besides writing that book, you are a business consultant and a global community builder. Can you tell me a little bit about how that has intersected in the world of caregiving?
Yes, it's a really good question, because what I do for a living and to generate income is very, very integrated with the story that I tell about my personal transformation and my leadership journey. As a firstborn of 5 children, I was always a natural leader anyway. I was always given almost extra responsibility. And I was that person for my mom. I was that child of hers that was her admin person, her go-to person for everything systematic, right? Sure. And so it was a very natural thing for me to put into practice what I've learned about running businesses, growing businesses, gathering community around businesses over all of the years, and then gathering community around my mom and her cancer diagnosis. So all of those skills that I've learned from a very young age have also informed who I am as a daughter and as a business person. And it's not that far of a stretch, you know, it is all really connected.
Sure. And are you seeing that thread continue to travel as you've no longer been the caregiver for your mom? Are you seeing that thread of those consultant skills and global community builder skills into work you're doing today?
Yes, I definitely am. Now I have a better sensibility of who people really are their whole selves, and not just who they show up at work as, right? So when my mom was first diagnosed, I was in Silicon Valley working for a global internet startup, and I didn't let anybody know what I was dealing with at home. And now I have that sensibility. Even you'll see me on LinkedIn talking about, you know, how are you really? What's going on with you, not only on your profile, on your socials, on your LinkedIn, what's going on for you at home? So it's made me a lot more curious.
Oh, that's excellent. It's made you more curious. And then are you helping people understand how to bring that in as either an employer or an employee?
I like to think so. I think the more conversations we have about this, and the more, again, I'll use the word mainstream, we make these everyday conversations, the more important it is for our communities and our world as a whole.
Excellent point. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. And when we come back, we're going to keep talking more with Lynn about why she believes that work-life balance is a myth. Lynn, when you share your sentiment, and you've done that on some of your posts, that the concept of a work-life balance is a myth, it seems as if you are speaking to that same sense of how unsustainable this experience of being a working family caregiver can be. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you have that perspective or your experience from it?
Yes, it's why I use the roller coaster metaphor. It's the roller coaster really exemplifies what it feels like. Because you're either like soaring down this like deep, 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 you know, hill, or you're kind of inching up a little bit, and maybe you're at the top and you can get a really beautiful view. So there, to me, there is no work-life balance. And one of the reasons that I believe that is because business is personal. And it's not separate from who we are as human beings. So when we have jobs to show up at, it's important to be treating the whole human, the whole human.
And okay, so you're saying, say that to me again about business, especially having been more of a teacher and not quite having the business background. Can you help me out there a little bit, please?
Well, for me, being a lifelong entrepreneur, business has always been personal. Right. I grew up in a family business. We didn't have a turnoff switch. There was no way to turn off business. We were always talking about what happened during the day in the business.
What type of business was it again, Lynn?
Well, one part of it was roller skating rinks in the Detroit area.
Cool.
So it was kind of interesting. I still roller skate to this day, only now I'm roller skating at the beach instead of inside a roller rink in Detroit.
Nice.
So that was one. My grandfather immigrated here from Baghdad, Iraq, And he started up this chain of roller skating rinks in the Detroit area. And so that was part of it. The other part was that my dad was an attorney. And so he did own a roller skating rink as well, but also I was a legal secretary. And so there was always talk about business, business, business. It's never seemed to end. And that's why I say work-life balance, forget that. It doesn't exist. It's a myth. So I think many people are trying to attain a balance in their lives. And sometimes, especially when you're starting a business, it's just all uphill and it's risky and it's scary. It's just like that cancer journey or that any other caregiving journey at home. It's risky. It seems like it's all uphill. It seems like you're never going to get a rest or a break, much less have a good night's sleep. So in that sense, it really is a myth to me. And so that's why I relaxed about it over these years. And that's part of my personal transformation, is just to chill out and not put expectations on myself that are unrealistic. So when we have a break, when we have a rest, when we have the good times and the upswings, great. We enjoy that. And then when we have like go, 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 produce, 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 whether it's in business or in the at home caregiving, it's all the same. It's just, you know, what I always like to say now is that we need to manage our energy much more than we need to manage our time.
Ooh, I like that, especially as someone who just today was saying that one of my biggest challenges is time management. And it is right. Well, oh, wow. Okay, wait, let's dig into that for a second. Right, because managing time, I can't control time. And so I don't manage it very well. So tell me what you mean by managing energy instead.
So time is finite. We can't, like you said, we can't control it. Energy is something that flows, right? It comes and it goes. And everything is energy. Money is energy. You know, relationships are energy. Everything is energy. So what happens and what has happened with me in the last many years, especially since my mom died, is that even at work, I've learned to manage my energy much more than my time, because I'll admit it right here in front of all of you, I am a recovering workaholic. And so as an entrepreneur, and I mentioned this earlier, that we, you know, we always would talk about business even at home at the end of the day. And that never stops. So now it's much more about holding my energy in chunks, kind of like, that's not really a great way to say it, but.
No, I'm following you. And I'm also having this weird life transition myself from going from being a classroom teacher to starting this business. And I was sharing with some friends, I mean, a classroom teacher, my time was controlled by bells. I mean, it was so structured. There were literally bells telling me where to be and when to be there. And now it's exactly what you're describing, where life and work and caregiving and fun and personal, you know, exploration is so intertwined. And so I get what you mean by this chunks of energy. Where am I going to put that energy? And how am I going to direct that energy? Because time is not really my friend.
Yes. And also building in the pause and building in a less structured day sometimes. So I used to have like Mondays, I left Mondays without scheduling too much. And that way I knew on Mondays I could schedule a coffee or a walk with a friend, for example.
Wow. Exactly.
So it's managing the energy has really come in handy, and I'm not always perfect at it. And it's, you know, a constant practice. It really is a practice, and just that.
Well, great. I really am appreciative that you've reminded me of that. Before we pivot to adding Angela Howard and her work on changing the culture of workplaces, can you tell listeners one more time where they can go learn more about you and where to order your book?
Yes, it's lynnabatejohnsonbook.com. And that's LYNNABATEJOHNSONBOOK.
All right. Perfect. We'll be back in just a moment to start talking about possible solutions to creating some of these caregiver-friendly workplaces. You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. We were just speaking with Lynn Abati Johnson, the author of Out of Love, about the caregiving experience she had with her mother and her journey of working while being a caregiver. You can find her book on her website, www.lynnabatijohnsonbook.com, and on Amazon. I'm excited to welcome our next guest, who Liza found going down one of her many rabbit holes in the research she does for our show. We have with us Angela Howard from Call of Culture. She's an organizational psychologist, speaker, and culture impact strategist with a mission to create more human-centric workplaces that send happier and more fulfilled humans home to further enrich their communities and society. Angela, please tell us a little bit about yourself. Welcome. And what's going on over at Call for Culture?
Hi, Kristen. Hi, Lynn. It's so good to be with you both. And thank you for having me on. I am Angela Howard. Thank you for the introduction. I'm the CEO at Call for Culture. We work with organizations to create safer, more inclusive workplace cultures. And we do that through a process which is really centered on organizational psychology and how humans actually operate in the workplace. And Lynn, I loved what you said earlier about we bring our whole selves to work. So I think we've created some mismatched paradigms when it comes to the workplace around what we're expecting people to be and do. And so we're trying to bring more humanity back into the workplace.
Okay. And so I had stated in your introduction that your mission is to create this more human-centric workplace. And I know that's what caught Liza's attention. And so I think you just described exactly what a human-centric workplace is, but is there any more you want to add to that?
Yeah, it's really around designing spaces and organizations and businesses around people. And what we know is organizations that have been able to operationalize their culture in a way that actually fits the people who are doing the work, they get better results, more productivity, less turnover, more innovation, less safety incidents. So we know it's not only good for people and humanity, but also for the bottom line.
Okay. I want to talk about the bottom line in a few minutes, but before we do that, I want to make the connection to family caregivers, since this is a family caregiver show. And it kind of seems sort of obvious to me, but I'm not sure if it's obvious to you or to an employer that having a more human-centric workplace might mean it's a little bit easier for me to be at work as a family caregiver. So before you dive into the whole business piece, do you have any personal experience as a family caregiver?
Yes. Yes. So my father passed away back in May of 2015. So Lynn, I kind of clutched my heart when you told your story, because it certainly hits home for me. Before I started my business, I worked in corporate America. And, you know, so Lynn, I also understand the environment that you were in. But I was lucky enough to work in an organization where my leadership created a flexible and safe environment for me to be able to express what I needed at that time.
When my father, that had to be fairly unique.
That felt unique to me, yes. Okay. And talking to other people and understanding how workplace culture works traditionally, this is also the reason why I started my business, because this was a unique experience and it shouldn't be. And in my case, when I was bringing that forward to my leader, I had just started the job. So no reason for them to be like, take all the time you need, but that's exactly what they did. They said, take all the time you need. You've been here a week, but we trust you. And that piece increased my loyalty by a millionfold in the future. And I added great value for that company. So that's my personal story.
That's great. And how do you take that now into the work you're doing to bring not just a caregiver-friendly workplace and a human-centric workplace, but one where it's actually being implemented?
Yes. So I think culture, inclusion, all these are buzzwords that we say a lot, right? And so I think it's really important for organizations to match their words with their actions. If we're going to say we're going to be an inclusive workplace, that also has to include the human experience and a diverse set of life events, which includes caregiving. And really, it all comes down to leadership. And I think what I find most working with organizations is oftentimes there is a mismatch between what we say. We care about people. We want to be inclusive. This is a people-centered work environment. And then what actually gets done within the organization and how the leaders show up and provide space, a safe space for their people. And so that's what we're trying to combat, for lack of better words.
Okay. And so how does that turn? I'm really appreciative that you are ready to take some of the buzzwords out of the conversation, right? Because I think that's probably why I was tripping over some of them in your introduction, is they are all over the place. And I'm not sure as a result, they have the meaning they need anymore. You know, our DEI work, I just sometimes kind of, you know, sort of ponder, well, what do you mean by DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, when it doesn't really necessarily look like it's diversity, equity, and inclusion from a whole human standpoint. It might be from a gender standpoint. It might be from a racial ethnic standpoint, but it might not necessarily really look at the whole human being. And so I love that you're recognizing that and you're saying, we're going to, you didn't say combat, did you? You said address.
I did say combat.
Okay, good. I was like, is it just me who wants to go out and fight?
We're challenging.
All right, perfect. And so tell me on a real specific way, if I was an employer, how would you be helping me combat that disconnect of what I might be talking about and wanting, but not actually being able to create in my work environment?
So the first step is defining it and naming it. So we work with organizations to pick apart those buzzwords. We look at their value system. And in some organizations, that value system may look like core values or words on a wall or beautiful words on a website. But we go in there and we work with the team to define and align behaviors around what it looks like and what it doesn't look like. And that's part of the secret sauce, because that is going to allow us to create a roadmap in understanding where we actually are versus where we want to go. So we have an assessment that we use that actually measures that. And that assessment considers everyone in the organization. So if supporting caregivers or supporting our employees through life events is important, we're going to ask the right questions to get at that and understand what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. And then we work with the organization to create a roadmap and we measure along the way.
Excellent. So let's first start with, if I was an employer right now and I was listening to this show, or I was married to an employer or a daughter of an employer who I know needed your services, how could they find you?
So you can find us at callforculture.com.
Okay.
That's the best way to get to us.
Excellent. And then they bring you in and you start talking about the kind of services and packages and assessments and that type of stuff.
Yep. All of our signature package is a long-term partnership. So my team works with the organization from 12 to 18 months. Culture change is not easy and it's not fast. So we're really kind of a partner and a guide along the way.
Okay. And are you finding that organizations that do hire you and partner with you are really trying to look at the whole human experience, or are they bringing you in to kind of meet some of their DEI data and their DEI goals? You know, is there true authenticity behind this?
It's a great question. So sometimes yes, and sometimes no. And we've been doing a very good job at filtering some of those, because we prefer not to work with the organizations who are just looking to check a box. And we do what we can up front to be clear that we're going to be your guide, but this is a commitment that has to be sustainable.
Okay.
You all will have to do the work.
I like it.
You're there to guide.
Exactly. And so don't invest in us, right? If you're not going to actually follow the roadmap we're going to create together. That's beautiful. Now I want to pivot to, okay, now I'm sitting in the audience, which most of us as family caregivers are probably not the leaders and the decision makers because of the life journeys we've been on. And so what can I do as a family caregiver at my workplace where I know they need your perspective, right? And so I can maybe suggest that they bring you in, but what are some other things that I could do to encourage, ask for, direct the workplace from the bottom up, right? From the employees to kind of demand, or, you know, if we're going to fight the fight, ladies, right? We're going to combat, but we're also going to demand some of this change. So what's some advice you want to give caregivers?
Yeah, so I do think a lot of culture change is a groundswell. So all of you who are listening, there is a great opportunity for you to be leaders. Leadership is a capability. It's not a role within an organization. So I think you could use some of your leadership skills to talk to your leader, to integrate in with any initiatives that are already happening, whether it's under the umbrella of DE&I or culture transformation or improvement, continuous improvement. Attach this to something that's already happening in the organization and bring this as an opportunity to amplify voices around your community and what you're passionate about.
That's beautiful. That's really good. I mean, there's something you said that I want to kind of go back to. You said, what was the first sentence that you said again about?
Ooh.
I know, sorry. That's probably not the best way to ask a question, but you were saying essentially a take the experience and an initiative and do what with them?
So a great way to create change and movement is to integrate what's already happening. So if there is a strategic initiative at the organization around DE&I or people first or people over profits or culture transformation, start talking to the people who are running those programs. So you can really amplify your voice as a caregiver and provide that perspective. And also maybe starting to talking to other caregivers around the organization and understanding where the opportunities are and being the integrator of all that information to roll up to the decision makers.
Excellent. Okay. That's exactly what I was looking for, is that piece that gives me some empowerment, right? That I actually can find the right way, because I do think a common message that I've heard from people, and Lynn brought it up in some of the posts that she's had, that it's scary and intimidating to tell your employer that you're a family caregiver. I mean, and as you said earlier, your experience was pretty unique, that one week into the job, they said, take all the time you need. I don't know, you're the exception to the norm from many of the stories that I've listened to. And I'm glad you had that. And it's not to make you feel guilty or, you know, special for it. It's just recognizing that since that isn't the norm, what we can do as family caregivers is find where we have those pathways, take advantage of that. And really, I, like you said, partner it and connect it to what is trying to be implemented in some of the strategies. Okay. What kind of pushback do you get from organizations and employers though? And how do you respond to that? Because I'm sure they're out there.
Oh, yes. I think a lot of times what we find is organizations hire us because they want to send a message to their people and say, see, this is what you need to do differently. 100% of the time, it's leadership.
Mm.
99.9% of the time, it's leadership.
Okay.
So usually it's some mismatch of what we say and what we do when it comes to leadership behavior, in groups and out groups when it comes to leadership. So the pushback happens when the mirror is in their face, to be honest. And you're hearing things like, you know, this is not about money, or it's not about a paycheck. I want to work for an organization where I feel like I belong and I'm safe here.
Mm-hmm.
And the leaders who are running this company do not make me feel that way. So we spend a lot of time with leadership and role modeling, and also accountability. Accountability is really important in making sure that you're driving that value system that you've developed as an organization.
And how can you get the leadership to do that though?
Well, oftentimes we do it with data. So thankfully we have an assessment that really makes it very clear where the issues are. And we work directly with the top level leader in the organization, the CEO, the founder. We don't do any work that's buffered. So we always require that CEO, that top level leader, is a part of the conversation. And that ensures that the commitment gets impacted all the way throughout the organization. Accountability takes time, but leadership development is also an important tool to send the message of what's important, and then hold people, coach people, and then hold people accountable to that.
Excellent. Well, when we return, we're going to talk a little bit more with both of these experienced and intelligent women to help craft an explanation for why everyone should care about creating these caregiver-friendly work environments and this work-centric approach. You have been listening to the Empowered Caregiver Radio Show, and we've been digging deep into both the problems family caregivers face when working outside the home and some of the hows of helping support them. But now I want to really explore the reasoning for why this needs to happen. And I want to go, and I'm opening it up for both of the women, both of my guests. And so again, if you haven't been following us all of the hour, we have Lynn Abati-Johnson, who is a global business consultant and has written a really interesting book about her experience of caring for her mother on an eight-year journey. We can't hear. An eight-year journey of caring for her mom while also working outside the house. And Angela Howard, who is the CEO and founder of a really interesting organization called Call for Culture, where they're really working with changing workplaces in an authentic manner to make them be more human-centric. I had a friend last night, I'm hoping he's not listening because I'm calling him out, who said, oh, you're going to talk to somebody who wants to change workplace culture so that people can feel good when they go to work? What is wrong with this young generation that feels like everything has to be about them and they're entitled to all of this whiny, I won't want to go to work unless you make me feel good? And I thought, because it's probably going to make their bottom line better. And he couldn't see that connection. And I thought, well, I don't want to do it because I want to let Angela do it since you're the expert. And so I want to ask you, how am I going to come back to my friend today after the show when he knows that I've been interviewing you and saying, this is why an owner of a business, an employer of a large corporation needs to care about their employees as these whole humans?
The answer is simple. I mean, I could get into all of the research that tells us that positive company cultures and commitment to employee well-being is linked to shareholder returns. But what I'll say is when you take care of your people, they take care of your stakeholders and your shareholders. And that may seem like an obvious thing, but the research tells us that positive employee, workplace cultures increases profitability by 22%, productivity by 21%, 10% in customer ratings. It lowers turnover by 65% and lowers quality defects by 41%. That's a study from Gallup in 2014. And those numbers still hold true throughout the decades when it comes to this research.
Right. Well, and I bet the pandemic, everybody keeps referring back to the pandemic and the quarantine and how that's shown us work needed to be different, work-life balance needed to be different. But I don't want you to necessarily repeat all of the statistics again, but I want you to tell me the measurable outcomes one more time.
Higher productivity.
Okay.
Higher profitability.
Okay.
Higher customer ratings.
Okay. Pause. So we've got higher productivity. Higher, what was it?
Profitability.
Profitability, right? Isn't that the key piece? Yeah. Because that's what these friends are saying to me. Like, I know it must be hard to be a family caregiver and be at work, but that's not their problem, Kristen. They've got to make money. And you're saying, but if they take care of me, if they take care of other family caregivers, they are going to make even more money.
Yes.
Can you spell that out for me? Break that down for me, please.
Yes. So what we know is that if we think about the opposite, right? If you are, enforcing employees to be at work when they are not functioning at their best, if you are putting them in situations where they have to multitask and put in a lot of emotional, physical, mental labor. Then you're going to get a less productive employee. And that's going to result in less profitability, less revenue, and potentially less of a positive interaction with the people who are going to be making you money, which is ultimately your customers.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Okay. And then I had stopped you because I wanted to go,
wanted to go deep.
But let's talk about hold on one sec. So now, Lynn, I think you might have to mute. Or I think Evan got you because I was doing feedback or something. So besides all of those measures, there was also something about high ratings.
Customer ratings.
Yeah. Talked about that for just a sec, please, Angela.
Yeah. So what we know is that when your employees are passionate and committed to your organization, and you're matching the partnership around what my values are and what your values are as an organization, and they're happy and they're aligned, that is going to show up in their behavior to your customers. So whether you sell a product or a service, they're going to be more innovative, more creative in working with your customers to problem solve. So that's kind of, I'll leave it at that, because that is the gist of that.
Yeah, that all makes sense. That all makes sense. Lynn, do you have anything you want to add to the conversation about why leadership? I like that she's using the word leadership, so I'm going to change my wording too. Why leadership really should care beyond the social, I should care about other human beings. Why should they care about their employees, especially if they're family caregivers?
It's a matter of integrity, right? So if you're running a workplace, a business that you say is human-centric, that you care about your people, that it's a humane environment, why should we have to choose between building a career and being real whole human beings at home caring for loved ones? Because guess what? We all have loved ones. Mm-hmm. We all have them, and things happen in life. And so it's naive, actually, to think that we can ignore a part of our life. You know, when I was in Silicon Valley, I basically was leading a double life because I had that fear, you know, that Angela was talking about. And I didn't feel like I really belonged there unless I could show up as the rock star that I was. So I had to be a rock star at work, and I had to be rock star at home with my mom, trying to do everything I could to make her comfortable.
Yeah. And that's not sustainable. But if both worlds open up, you can be a rock star and show up in both places, right? If you can do that integration. That's excellent. Ladies, this has been just one of the best conversations. I know that Liza's kicking herself that she missed out. Just so the audience knows too, that these two women have now connected in all kinds of levels. As Lynn was sharing your grandfather came from—
My grandfather. Yeah,
and Angela's husband's from Iraq. So they're going to have all kinds of opportunities. And it's been wonderful to be experiencing this with you all. We know that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting. So that's why we want to end each show with a positive note. You got this. And together with each other, one another, and women like this, we are going to be stronger. So stay connected to the Empowered Caregiver community. Have a great night. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Slattery's Automotive Service in Verona, established in 1973.